Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Wrestle Culture. In your ring, in your ring, zombie, WWE, zombie. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by Phil Chambers and Michael Hamflett from What Culture to discuss all the goings on in wrestling and review WrestleMania. Right. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Phil and Hamflett. And before we dive into the week's events and what happened at WrestleMania Backlash, Phil, can we get a quick chicken update?
Quick chicken update. Still got all of them.
Yay!
And so that's a good sign. They're all caged in. They're happy little chickens now. It's all good.
I realized as I was saying that, I was like, uh-oh, I'm taking my life into my hands. If he's like, a fox got in and they've all died.
then I was all the chickens, but they know when to follow the rules.
Okay. Phil, what did you make of zombies at WrestleMania? Specifically, actually, lumberjack zombies.
I was going to say, just before we were starting the podcast, I was like thinking in my head, I was like, I wonder what the podcast is going to be about. And then you weren't mentioning it. And then you started and I was like, oh yeah, WrestleMania Backlash was like 5 days ago and I'd completely forgotten already. So that's probably not the best sign coming out of that pay-per-view. But yeah, zombies. I don't know what to say. It kind of came out of absolutely nowhere. It makes no sense. Is The Miz a zombie now? John Morrison wasn't a zombie, but he got attacked. But The Miz got, I guess, more attacks. Maybe John Morrison managed to get away. So that's how he got out of his zombification. But are we going to get a zombie Miz coming back now? It's all very strange. And then they just did the lumberjack match again anyway on the Raw, just without zombies. It's so crazy. I get that they're doing the tie-in for the movie and things, but just keep it to a 24/7 skit backstage. Don't turn the entire match into zombies when you're trying to establish a star in Damian Priest.
Such a weird show, this, because like I've described this as a roller coaster on a write up of it recently, because like there were some flashes of really good stuff. Like the WWE Championship match was bonkers. We'll get into that in due course. Roman Reigns versus Cesaro obviously was great. There were issues that I had with both Rhea Ripley, Asuka and Charlotte Flair and the other women's match, Bianca Belair versus Bayley. I think we talked about this on the SmackDown preview. They're sort of holding stuff back and they wanted to do the whole hair stuff thing and it just didn't really work. And then I just really quite enjoyed the Mysterios becoming SmackDown Tag Team Champions. And then, yeah, in the midst of all this, Hamflett, you alluded to it today, switching gears, they just suddenly decided, oh, we're going to have John Morrison go to the lumberjack changing room and then discover that they've all turned into zombies to promote Batista's film. Now, Hamflett, you had a few days off, but it's one of those things where even if you say to yourself, you know what, I'm just going to get out of the loop for a bit, like, you can't avoid. There's bloody zombies at WrestleMania Backlash. Tell me how you found out about it and what you thought about it.
It was honestly like, it was sort of, imagine taking the Monday to just decide to like enjoy WrestleMania Backlash at your own pace for change, like not watching it live or not doing the coverage or whatever. It itself sort of became a zombie. I was just trying to go about my day. Then every now and then there'd be this, like this lurching creature coming from like places I couldn't understand. Because it was just something about it was like kind of like leering towards me and trying to like, well, eat my flesh, basically, which is what WWE's been doing for the like over 30 years now. Yeah, I watched Backlash at my own. It was weird. So like I watched it my own time and split it up a little bit and like quite enjoyed, like Sheamus Ricochet was really stupid on the kickoff, but the match itself was pretty good. Like I've really enjoyed the women's three-way that opened the show. I was with you, Wilborn. It was really nice to see the tag titles change hands, and I took a little break, didn't I? I didn't really take into full account what the hell John Morrison was on about, and I came back to Miz and Damian Priest's defeat, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And then, like, from that point, I watched that and then thought, do I want to watch the rest of the show, or do I need to go and see the reactions to things? I didn't want to get, like, the main event spoiled, so I ended up going and watching the show through properly. But then that explains how WWE even exists, because, like, I'm just living through that experience again. I watched the zombies. I thought about going to see what the response to this was, because it's an absolute disgrace. And then I thought, no, actually, I'll sit and watch the rest of the show. The zombies haven't put me off watching the rest of this. It's not stopped me engaging with this godforsaken thing. That's how they win. That's how WWE wins, and it always will. Because it's just like, oh, yeah, the zombies. Yeah, absolute bloody disgrace. What's this, Bianca Belair and Bayley next? Yeah, I'll stick around. I've like just that guy from The Wire or something, just waiting for like one last fix. Just like, yeah, go on, 5 more minutes. If she finishes it with her hair, it's pretty cool, isn't it? Like, maybe things will be all right. It was fun. It was fun, like, to watch and think how awful this was going to be received. And I think I said this on, like, the Raw review. I think it's more of an indictment on WWE that people weren't more disgusted with this. Mm-hmm. People have become bizarrely acceptant with whatever they fart out WWE. Like, there is good stuff. There is. Genuinely, we'll get to loads of it, but the bad stuff at this point is so like commonplace that there's no surprise anymore. The example I used was there would sometimes be like massive criticism online if 2 matches in a row had featured wrestlers working the leg.
Mm.
Like, that's a bloody disgrace. You can't do that to like a cardinal sin. And like now guys' eyes get ripped out and people get eaten by bins and like, zombies follow the rules of a lumberjack match. It's just, like, nothing registers anymore because, like, nobody cares enough to want it to register. And that, to me, was the biggest indictment of Zombiegate.
And I'd forgotten the zombies in NXT, of course, in the Cameron Grimes versus Dexter Lewis match. Some of them are getting more ring time than half the people on the Raw roster.
That's the first time in ages that NXT has been an actual developmental show, isn't it? So they've obviously done their drills down there around Halloween time and they've been called up for the main roster just after WrestleMania. That's how it always used to work.
Oh, God. So just to clarify, zombies have made an appearance on a pay-per-view quicker than Slapjack has. Just
this was so odd as well, though, because it's like we went through that period of them doing all the cinematic matches and stuff like last year. And they just got more and more like ridiculous and stuff as time went on. And it came to a point where you were almost looking for that match on every show because they were going to have something because it was a silent era. They didn't have the Thunderdome and everything. And I think this one's just come so out of the blue that it's just like, wait, what? Like we've finally settled away from the kind of ridiculousness of WWE last year. That this one's just come out of nowhere. And it makes no sense. If it was like within the context of all of those shows, we probably like wouldn't even be talking about it. It'd be like, fine, yeah, stupid thing, let's move on. But it's just because it's so out of context. And now within the Thunderdome setting, it just feels so much more out of place than it would have done just like 6 or 7 months ago.
We should have known. I'm now forever going to be suspicious. And when I'm making my notes on, you know, previews for pay-per-views, I'm going to look to see what this pay-per-view is brought to you by. Because obviously we've had like, you know, thingy as...
the KFC. Yeah.
You've had, what was the other thing? Oh, you had Bugs winning the title in an Old Spice commercial. And now you've this. So the next one, I dread to think, let us know your suggestions on what sort of, what tie-ins they could do in the future. I dread to think what the comments on Twitter are going to be like off the back of this. But Phil, main event time, Roman Reigns versus Cesaro. I just thought it was great. I think me and Hamflet just heaped more and more praise on not only what they're doing with Roman, but with the Usos. I want you to talk mainly about what you thought about the Cesaro match, but yeah, SmackDown is just in such rich form with this family feud going on right now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that main event. It was so good. I don't think we were expecting anything less, to be honest, from Cesaro in his first major main event. But God, he didn't disappoint. I loved how they put across how Cesaro managed to take Roman Reigns like to the absolute limit, and the amount that Roman Reigns sold for him as well, and sold really, really well. Not only in is getting frustrations of, oh my God, can I actually like beat this guy? But like when he was in moves and things, like he's selling them pain that he was in, was it was just absolutely fantastic. And it just made Cesaro look like such a bigger star than he probably ever has before, just because he was in there with a guy like Roman Reigns, who is on the absolute form of his life. And it just, it all fit, and it felt perfect. It felt comfortable, and it was like, it was right. And it was like, oh my God, this is Cesaro's moment finally. Obviously, I don't think anyone expected him to win, but I liked that they kind of kept the Usos out of it a little bit until the end. And now with sort of Seth Rollins coming down as well, you've got story beats that you can take out of this into different directions. And just Jey Uso at the end, just the whole, let me at him, let me at him, let me at him, like Scrappy Doo kind of, this little pit bull that he's like, got at the end of his leash, because he's just worn him down that much at this point that he's just desperate to do whatever Roman Reigns is bidding is. But yeah, absolutely loved it. Like I say, made Cesaro look like the absolute star that we've always kind of known he can be, but has never really been in that position and like pictured as that within the WWE system. And yeah, it was absolutely spectacular. And some of the stuff that they were coming out with, it was just, loved it. So good.
That springboard off the rope straight into a Superman punch was just such a wonderful series of maneuvers. And oh, the bit where Reigns has got, he's obviously targeting that arm, which I thought Cesaro, I mean, no surprise, sold brilliantly, sold so realistically.
Yeah.
But he's sending a personal message to Daniel Bryan whilst he's trying to break this bloke's arm.
Just the little things like Cesaro, like switching up his arm and things that he's doing it. And it's just, it's stuff that just makes sense, but it just makes it feel so much more real.
It's amazing how much you can get a baby face over in defeat without shenanigans, isn't it, Hamflet?
Yeah. So refreshing that they actually just beat him clean in a hard fought match where he's lost to the better man on the night, when at points he looked like he might be able to get it done. Just trust your talent to tell the story and be relatively polished with your booking, and people like fans will accept it. Like nobody now was suggesting that Cesaro was buried on Sunday because he like lost the match. This strange, crippling fear they have over how fans will receive baby faces if they lose matches. Like the reason I think less of Ricochet is not because he lost to Sheamus, it's because he stole his hat and pretended like he'd won. That could just toss a behavior. Cesaro, like, you know, went down like a hero.
Yeah.
Just tried his hardest. Imagine that. Like, sometimes it's not going to work. Maybe it will another time. Roman Reigns, like, had to put a shift in. And for what we know about Roman Reigns, that tacitly puts over Cesaro as a guy that gave him a hell of a fight. It's, like, it's basics, really. Like, that sort of stuff is just basics. But, yeah, as Phil points out, like, really stunningly executed basics. Really, really great match. I don't think it's going to trouble any, like, match of the year conversations at the end of the year, truthfully. It was, like, it was great, but, like, not awesome. It didn't quite hit that level. I do wonder, like, how fans might have responded to Cesaro's push over the last month had they been in attendance. A lot of people have been clamouring for it for years, and it sort of feels like, in terms of, like, main event run, this might be it. Like, he might have had a go, and then he'll start becoming a babyface setup guy again. But it's been nice to watch. And like Cesaro in ring, he never lets you down, Cesaro. So like the match was as great as the match was, it wasn't a surprise that it was great. So it was just nice to see them deliver on like what I imagine were like fairly high expectations internally.
Hamflet, you mentioned that women's matches there. I don't really want to group them together in terms of just like, hey, here's the women. But I felt like both matches, I enjoyed them and then just felt a little bit let down. And therefore, my memory of both matches due to their finishes, they weren't really botches. Just like the Charlotte one, where I was like, well, why hasn't she got in to break it up? And yes, commentary said, oh, she got knocked off the apron. But I was like, I didn't see that. And I can't hear the commentary because we're doing the live stream and what have you. My word, doing that bloody zombie thing with Ben Roy Turner was quite the test for me. Yeah, Bianca Belair and Bayley was obviously like we alluded to on the SmackDown preview, Hamble. It was hair stuff with keeping plenty in the bank for, well, potentially money in the bank, I suppose, or Hell in a Cell as it comes next.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Both finishes were clunky. The triple threat in particular, it was a strange one for them to kind of botch the production of, because, you know, Charlotte, I guess the camera did eventually cut to Charlotte, who was on the floor looking shocked, but it was after the three count, and I was exactly the same as you. I'm wondering, watching, why she hasn't ran in to break up the thing when we've just had a triple threat match where the whole point is you're constantly reminding the audience that there's somebody on the floor. So they'll have stuff going on in the ring, the camera will cut to the third person recovery, and they'll come in. You keep them hidden when you want to have that like element of surprise. So the fact that the camera didn't cut to Charlotte, your wrestling fan brain is trained to the idea that she's going to slide in and break it up, because you don't know where she is. That they weren't able to tell you the story to the point where the commentary had to do it. I believe in that line that you said, I believe that came in the replay.
Yeah.
Because it was as if this thing, they'd realized that this thing had been missed. It's like there was a kind of, a, like a not a plot hole as such, but there didn't seem to be any clear reason why Charlotte couldn't break it up. Like, only slightly undermined the match for me. I did think the match was pretty strong. The Bayley-Bianca finish didn't so much as undermine the match as it did define it. Like, there was a couple of times when they didn't really look on the same page. We mentioned this on the SmackDown preview. Like, I want to give them a bit of the benefit of the doubt because, like, they had to follow the zombie stuff. I think it was, like, the show's vibe had changed drastically off the back of it. You know, it wasn't even promoted, the zombie stuff. Like, they didn't even tease, like, there was no theme around it at all. Like, so I think, like, that's going to have this, like, bizarre sort of shock effect on the show at large. And it's going to take, like, a couple of matches to turn around from that. Bayley and Bianca were stuck in that a little bit, but the finish was a little overcomplicated and poorly executed. And I don't think it just wasn't the best night for either of them. Mm. There's a better match in them. There's, like, high-stakes rematches there if they want to do them. But, you know, and I don't know what Phil's sort of take is on this, watching this every single week for review purposes, where you do get into the weeds quite a lot. Like, I don't think the booking of Bianca Belair has been very good at all as a weekly television character. And as much as I wanted Bayley and Bianca to be great on the strength of their ability, I didn't really buy the story going in. I don't think they've particularly done the work to get them there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think SmackDown, like, women's division as a whole has fallen a long way from the heights of Bayley and Sasha at the top of the card. And we saw it in the Sasha and Bianca Belair build to WrestleMania that was lackluster at best. And then they managed to pull it off at the end with an amazing match at WrestleMania. And this as well was just, it felt very, like, the build to it on SmackDown felt very secondary in WWE's minds with all the sort of Roman Reigns stuff that's going on. And, like, you get that that's sort of the main focus of the TV show going forward, but it doesn't mean you can't put as much effort or at least some effort into the rest of the show. And yeah, the women's and especially Bianca Belair, it's fallen down a lot in that respect. And leading into this, I was really hoping for another WrestleMania kind of situation where they just come out and, yeah, it's been a bit of a crappy build, but when you get to the point where you're just putting the two performers together and it's like their moment to shine and they come out with an absolute banger, and it just wasn't quite that. It never even really came close to the heights of Sasha and Bianca at WrestleMania. And it's just, and the finish as well, it's like they just seem like they just can't have definitive winners if they know that the story's going to continue at any point down the line. And I don't understand how they've got to this point where they're like afraid to make people lose. Like, you've got a champion and the champion's Bianca Belair and you want to push her as this strong champion. She's already like taken down Sasha Banks at WrestleMania to take down Bayley at the next one. It doesn't mean Bayley can't have another match down the line. It just means you've got an even stronger Bianca Belair for her to go up against. And I just don't understand how they just can't make people win definitively in these situations.
And this be perfect for a, you know, crybaby heel like Bayley is. Just lose and then pretend it never happened or make up some nonsense excuse that we all know is kind of bollocks. But
yeah, she's easily good enough on the mic to explain it away in any kind of situation. And yet they have to go with the surprise victory. And it's just boring at this point. Really, really boring.
Bill, you are a nice man. You have chickens and a very good boy. So I'd love to know your thoughts on if we are heading towards Dominic Mysterio electric chair and his dad next month on Father's Day. Because me and Hanfler are convinced that this is happening, especially now they've won the tag titles, which was a lovely moment, regardless of all that, especially with Dominic hitting the finisher.
Should have happened at WrestleMania, though.
Yeah. But what do you reckon? Is that just our sadistic minds, or can you see something like that playing out?
I don't know. I think it might be a while away until they get there, but I want it to happen just because I can imagine like Ray would probably want it to happen as well. Because if you imagine like you pitch this thing where you kind of only stay in WWE because like you're going to get your son an incredible deal out of it in the same place. So you've got to think he would kind of a bargaining chip with as to how he's running WWE has been so long and so successful so far. So you like, and you pitch all these scenarios in your head and you're like, I want to be like tag team champions with my son. That would be like this amazing moment. And you get to that. And then what's the next logical thing? Once you've done that, it's the father son feud. And then he puts Dominic over as like, what better thing can you do? Like if you're either on your way out of the business, I don't know if he is on his way out of the business, but you know what I mean? Like as a pitch of a dream things to do when you're having your son there in WWE and you're getting to wrestle with him. Like first step, tag team champions, next step has to be a feud at some point down the line. So I've no idea when that might be. Maybe they'll push it more out towards SummerSlam or something like that. I could maybe see, but I do want it to happen somewhere down the line. I don't think it's going to be as quick as Father's Day though, although that would be amazing.
I love it. The synergy of it being on Father's Day at Hell in a Cell. I think June 20th, I think it is. And then, like, I haven't alluded to this, I didn't even think about it that much in terms of this long-term plan. But I haven't, yeah, the fact that you could get to Mysterio versus Mysterio at SummerSlam, the historical location of quite a lot of history, especially with the one Dominic Mysterio. And also, like, yeah, you can, if you want, you could probably have him in a Money in the Bank match or just have him go away for a bit until Rey Mysterio returns from internal injuries and anything you want to do with that. But yeah, it's right there, Hamlet.
I think so. I think it's a nice idea to do Mysterio vs. Mysterio at SummerSlam, as I pointed out in the preview, just for like his Dominic Mysterio's rich history there. Like it'll be 1 year on from his debut. There's quite a nice bit of symmetry, obviously, of I don't need you now, Dad. If you're even my dad, because I watched another SummerSlam on Peacock, and I don't think you are. It's fun for them to like play with that a little bit. And I quite like...
I really hope they go down you're not my real dad route for this story.
Just this, like, there's enough heels that... So, like, Rey Mysterio, like, the eternal evergreen babyface that he is, there's enough heels that would quite probably enjoy being the devil on Dominic's shoulder as well. Mm. So, in the build, you sort of obscure the fact that Dominic's still very much in training and a work in progress by, I don't know, the likes of Baron Corbin or someone... like whispering in his ear, like, that was pretty cool what you did to your dad. Like, if you ever want to go and, like, hang out in rough places, you come to me, I'll take you to a biker bar. You know, we just see, like, gradually the fact that without the sort of protection and supervision of his dad, he's becoming more and more corrupted by some of the more nefarious colleagues that he shares the ring with in WWE. I don't know, I just think there's, like, I think there's fun to be had, but ultimately, especially in, like, a singles match, Ray would want to do everything he could to get his son over, get his son established. And yeah, just the electric chair, such a great turn. And they know it is. Like, they know it is. They know that's such a perfect way for him to, like to flip as well.
If only they hadn't ruined the whole Seth Rollins, Buddy Murphy, Mysterios thing. Could have tied it into that somehow. Yeah. If they didn't do that for 6 months and it'd go nowhere.
Should they acknowledge on screen that, like they'd split up? Buddy Murphy and...
I have no idea.
I think, well, Murphy came back and explained none of why he was... Like, didn't explain how him and Aaliyah had broken up, I guess. That must have happened. And also didn't explain... Like, just kind of gave a nod to Seth Rollins when he was doing one of his preachy backstage segments. And then he mainly disappeared in, like, 2 weeks after that again. So, who the hell knows?
Talked a lot about stuff going on SmackDown. But Hamlet... Surprisingly, the WWE Championship match was bloody good fun on Sunday.
Yeah, great. Way better than I thought it was going to be. Like, I hold my hands up. I just had, like, the lowest expectations going in because the story was miserable. Basically, the match on Sunday was everything that, like, I think the story was trying to be, which was, oh my God, these big men do big things. Isn't this exciting? It was like, no, I'm sick of, somehow you've made me sick of watching this. saw like a great tweet where, like, and I apologize to whoever it was. I can't remember the handle, but like WWE had uploaded a GIF of the, it was on the Go Home Raw. You know, when like Bobby Lashley got slammed through the barrier and like their official account had just tweeted, unbelievable. And then like the guy that had quote tweeted it, tweeted all again, all in capitals, believable. The sort of stuff that happens all the time. And yeah, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just that like pay-per-views are a better setting for it because you're not exhausted with promos or pointless like interstitials or whatever. It didn't, there was nothing else on the card like it. So the, again, like, you know, credit to these WWE pay-per-views, typically they're quite well agented. You have your like your hard-hitting Roman Reigns match. If you're going to do a big boy match, you do it in the way that they did here. You've got your zombies in the middle of the card. Like, they always think about how they're going to like lay things out for the benefit of stuff. And yeah, I was like thoroughly impressed with the energy levels of all three. There was no even attempt to dress this up like a spot rest, like psychological big man brawl. It was just like, just do all the bumps and just keep on bumping. And I admired the grift of it because I kind of thought, well, look there, like this is a 10-minute con job or something, but I can't not be entertained by it because like, look at what they're all just doing to each other.
Also, Phil, as a former wrestler, what was Braun Strowman going for as he came off the apron, aside from attempting to break his own neck?
Absolutely no idea. It felt like these are athletic big men. Well, anything they can do, I can do better. Watch me. Here I go. But yeah, it was really, really good fun match. Really loved it. Bobby Lashley seems to really enjoy being thrown through the set. It seems to happen to him quite a lot, especially when Braun Strowman's involved. And now it's happened again in a very similar fashion. But yeah, it's just like big beefy boys doing big beefy boy things. What's not to love about that?
And now apparently Kofi Kingston's the number one contender.
Hey, at least it's something different. They've run this Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre thing into the ground, along with Braun Strowman. It's something new. I'm down for a bit of a distraction with Kofi Kingston and Bobby Lashley. Obviously, Kofi's going to lose to whatever that happens, whenever it happens. It's all very strange and come out of nowhere. But yeah, it's something different. And gotta love that.
Also, I'm not sure how I feel, considering I know what wrestling fans are like, about WWE going, here's all the Instagram tags of all the sexy ladies that came out with Bobby Lashley on Raw. I was worried about that pamphlet. I was like, uh-oh, you know where this is going.
They thought they'd just like got a pretty good payday for one day's worth of work, and they've since had to lock their DMs. What a week.
What is Bobby Lashley's character at the minute? Like, when they were building him up to be world champion, it was great. Like, he had MVP and his manager, and he was just big ass-kicking bad guy dude. And it was great. And they built him up really well. He ran through loads of different people, finally got his way to the top. Fantastic. Ever since that point, he seems to change like every couple of weeks as to what exactly he is. And now he's some kind of moneybags dude who comes out with loads of women. It's like there's just odd little changes, but none of them make any sense whatsoever. And they just don't fit with who they've presented him as. I don't understand it.
Odd little changes, none of them make any sense whatsoever. Cut to somebody reading Vince McMahon's alterations 5 minutes before Raw goes on the air. And that's why Bobby Lashley makes no sense any given week.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, before we get to this week's hashtag bloody good quiz, which is a bloody good quiz, trust me on that one. One final thing. Phil, you obviously, you may or may not have seen what happened on the kickoff show. We had Ricochet versus Sheamus, non-title match. Sheamus won, then Ricochet attacked him and stole his hat and his coat. Did it again on Raw, saying he was channeling Ernest the Cat Miller. And then on SmackDown, of course, you've got Shinsuke Nakamura stealing King Corbin's crown. What is WWE's obsession with wrestlers stealing stuff, mate?
Who knows, but they will never, ever stop doing it. I just hope the Nakamura thing is some kind of hint at a King of the Ring tournament. Don't care how they do it. If it's just a SmackDown thing, I'd be fine with that. But I love King of the Ring. It won't be. It'll just be, he's a King of Strong Style and he's King Corbin. Let's make them fight over a crown. That'll be the gist of it forever. But yeah, who knows? And Ricochet didn't even do the Ricochet joke.
Yes!
What's this? It was right there. He was doing possibly the worst Irish accent I've ever heard. Yes. He didn't even do the Ricochet joke.
I quite like the idea of us just like referring to him as Rico from now on. Like he kind of, like he's shouting for a pass and he plays in your local five-a-side team. Oh, Rico! Right there. It's just like anywhere at this point in which something happens that we reduce the superhuman skills of this like unbelievable should be a billionaire because of his ability athlete to just, I don't know, little cheap gags at his expense, I think only highlights WWE's ineptitude with him.
He takes a really good bro kick though.
Yeah.
Oh, lush. Yeah.
When are they just going to turn him heel and just make him be, look at me, I'm fantastic, and just have that as his character? It'd be so much easier.
Maybe it's all one big plan so they can get him to be Prince Puma again and just be like, oh, give him a crown. Everyone gets a crown. You get a crown. You get a crown. Like, if you were going to nick something, like, no offence to Sheamus. I love him and I'm slightly terrified of him and I'm probably related to him, if I'm not considering. But I wouldn't nick his hat and his coat.
I'd probably, championship belt.
I'd nick his belt, or I'd nick Seth's suit, or I'd nick Riddle's scooter. I just don't understand why they're obsessed with stealing things, especially the baby faces, Amphlet.
They're all like, all these baby faces that do it as well, they all just come across like complete tossers. Like, all's maybe a bit unfair because like Nakamura looked pretty great in the crown and people could get very excited about the King of Strong Style for a couple of days, but it's like the booking is worse than just, oh, there he is, putting on somebody's coat, like your arsehole mate. Like, he's just been beat as well. So the goal of him are like, do that, and then be like, now it's kind of 1-1. It's not a score draw, pal. Like, if anything, you've just lost the match and then scored an own goal. Like, and then we get the same nonsense on Raw the next night. Again, it's like a bit like the zombies. Maybe NXT is developmental because Cameron Grimes was getting his hat nicked by Kushida about a year back. And finally, that story has now graduated to the main roster. So maybe like there's going to be a network special on that storyline, getting the call up and how emotional it was. Like, you know, the writer that first crafted the stolen objects story was given the call bounce, man. Heard good things about you down there on NXT. I want 4 baby faces stealing items this week. Go. And I said, that's his task for the week.
You ever had that thing where you say, oh yeah, someone told me this, and you just repeat back to someone the thing that they told you? Because I do that a lot, obviously, with lockdown and not knowing what day or time it is half the time. But do you reckon, like, we talk often, Hamflet, about like, what's your thing? He goes to Shinsuke after all these years. What's your thing? Well, you kind of ruined the whole entrance thing and then brought it back when there was no one there and didn't really change anything. But I suppose I'm King of Strong Style. Thief. Cool. Got it. Right. You go to the pay-per-view. What's your thing? I'm insanely talented. I can do divide gravity. I got over in NXT saying two words, and he said, show me, didn't he, to Velveteen Dream. Did that, flipped out the ring and went, thief. No, Vince, you've already done that one 2 days ago.
He probably said something like, if I can't get over in your wrestling company, Vince, I'll eat my hat. Steal your hat. Love it. Love it, pal. Get out there. Do your thing.
Well, let us know your thoughts on everything we discussed and what happened at WrestleMania Backlash, particularly those bloody zombies. At What Culture WWE. But enough of all this. It's now time for a
bloody good quiz.
And this week's quiz is brought to you by Vitopia. Thank you for your review on iTunes, even though it was one star. Balance it out. Give us a 5-star review if you've not done it so far. What Culture is on iTunes? Leave us a 5-star review. Because Vitopia writes, low blow. Don't clickbait my podcast by including win-loss information in the title. I mean, don't look at your phone. Watch the pay-per-view first. It's not my fault, all right? And also, I don't even know what that one relates to, because whenever I write about pay-per-views, I make sure I write, who left with the WWE Championship? So calm down, mate. It was probably like a spoiler from NXT. I mean, calm down a little bit. But anyway, this quiz, I had a bit of fun with it, is all about supernatural gimmicks. Of course it is. I have lovingly crafted this earlier on today. Usual rules, gents. Shout out your name, multiple choice. Wait for me to come to you. And it's 10 questions, and it's always just for fun. Gents, are you ready to go through the history of supernatural gimmicks?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Question number one. Who was the Boogeyman's first match against? Was it Nunzio, Simon Dean, Orlando Jordan, or The Miz?
Phil, I'm going to go with Simon Dean just because I don't think you'd put Simon Dean as an option.
Been enjoying the Simon system quite a lot on our Raw reviews recently, but it was Simon Dean. I think he interfered in Survivor Series prior to that, but his first official match was with Simon Dean, who had to be dragged out by security to have the match. Problematic. Question two. Started off quite easily here. What date, when spoken, would send Kane?
Pamphlet.
Phil.
May 19th.
Yeah.
I wrote down April 20th, April 1st, and December 25th for the other options, because I knew you'd both know that one and wouldn't even get to my option. It
was Christmas Kane.
Right. Question three. Andy Murray, be all over this. Who was the first wrestler to receive a bloodbath from the Brood?
Pamphlet.
Check you out.
I will caveat this, as always. It's not necessarily the right answer. It's the answer I've got written down. It was the one I found when Googling 5 minutes. Who got bloodbath first by the Brood? What are you going for? Say again?
Al Snow.
It wasn't Al Snow. He wasn't the first. I think he was second. Phil, do you want the options?
I do, yeah.
The options are Al Snow, Ken Shamrock, Tiger Ali Singh, or Road Dog.
Go for A, Phil. Go for A.
Ooh. I have no idea. I'm going to go with Road Dog.
It's not Road Dog. They've all been gunged. It was, in fact, Tiger Ali Singh was the first
one. Yeah, that was the other one. I assumed it wasn't going to be Ken Shamrock.
Some random old WWE article that I found. May not be true, but who cares? Question four. Demon Finn Balor made his first NXT appearance at what takeover? Was it Unstoppable, Evolution, Fatal 4-Way, or Rival?
Phil. Oh. Was it Evolution?
alongside Hideo Itami. It was indeed Evolution.
Hideo Itami's NXT career in one fell swoop. It's like the bit in The Simpsons where like they see that like lovely little lamb and then there's an even cuter one. Like, get out of the way, you!
I think they faced the Ascension, Hamlet, you'll remember.
Yeah, they did, yeah. The Ascension had been bullying Hideo Itami. So Finn Balor showed up and it was like, oh, these two guys, like they're both wrestlers in Japan, so they're probably friends. And then they put them together and like Balor came out as the demon and it was like, oh Christ, he's a big deal. He's his partner again.
Who's this little guy?
Now, question five, 2-1 as it stands, Phil. I will admit that Hamlet will be of a slight advantage on this one because we did review it for the 5-star review this week. But how long is the Sandman versus the ECW zombie? Is it 10 seconds, 12 seconds, 14 seconds, or 16 seconds?
Phil.
Oh, Phil.
Gonna get in there just on the off chance. I'm going to go with 14 seconds.
It's not 14 seconds.
Is it 16?
It is 16 seconds. All it is, Phil, it's worth watching this, is him twatting the zombie right on the head, like on the forehead with his signature Singapore cane, breaking it over him and then hitting a white Russian leg sweep, I think is what they describe it as. It's...
Excellent.
I'll tell you what it is. It's exactly how you remember it.
Did he spend longer busting himself open with a can of beer in the intro than he did in the actual match?
Actually, go and watch that video because in the comment section, maybe not one. I think maybe the comments have been turned off on that. But one of the other uploads of that, someone writes a very detailed explanation why zombies don't work in wrestling. but I'm not sure. Actually, maybe he doesn't bust himself open because this was WWE CW.
Yeah,
WWE CW. So it was like, well, I can do whatever they like within reason. I don't do any of that. Also, randomly, presumably because I watched that, the Heyman promo from One Night Stand popped up, and I will forever laugh. If I ever stop laughing at it, I think I'm done. At Heyman saying, Edge, I've got two words for you. Matt freaking Hardy, and Edge spitting out the beer and then going, that's three words. That's three words. right, two each with five questions to go. Oh, I love this question. I was trying to write a question about Mordecai and I just lost all interest. So I instead wrote one about Kevin Thorne. So question six, what was the name of Kevin Thorne's tarot reading sidekick? Was it Jazz? Oh,
Ariel?
I worked really hard on these names.
Sorry, boss, Jasmine. I should have known where that was going. I should have.
Jasmine, Marita, Belle, or Ariel. It was, yes, of course. Ariel.
Pocahontas, wasn't it? Yeah, that was it.
I've told the story many a time, but one of Ana Luisa's best mates' kids has just all wrestling figures, just collects them. His mum just buys them from like car boot sales if they're just random ones. So he's got like eight different versions of Kane or whatever. His favourite wrestler is Sin Cara. So that's a little bit awkward. but he was showing them to me because obviously I'm the only other person that's really interested in them. And he went, oh, look at this one. It's Sting this. And I was like, that's Kevin Thorne. Oh, I don't think it is. He went, no, it's Sting from WCW. And I'm like, it's got like sideburns and a red tie on. I don't think it is Sting if I want. right, 3-2 to Hamlet. Question seven. When did Matt Hardy first become broken? Was it 2014, 2015, 2016, or 2017?
Phil. 2015.
It's not 2015.
Ah, I know what it is then.
16.
Is.
Yeah.
It's at least
I was thinking because we had him in WCPW in 2016 and I didn't know how long it had been going. So I went with 2015.
Yeah. Question 8-4-2. Who eliminated Papa Shango from the 1993 Royal Rumble? Was it?
Oh, hang on. Ric Flair.
in 28 seconds. It was Ric Flair. Do you know what option four was going to be there, Hamflet?
Bob Backlund.
Bob Backlund was one of the options. It was going to be Bob Backlund, Ric Flair, Ted DiBiase, or the Berserker. Right.
I'm glad you took a moment there to fill that missing link.
Question nine. 5-2, but it's just for fun, as always. For how many consecutive years did The Undertaker win Best Gimmick from the Wrestling Observer? Is it 4, 5, 6, or 7?
Phil, why not? 7.
Ooh, good. It's not right, though.
I'll skew low. Was 4 the lowest?
4 was the lowest.
I'm going to go 4.
It's actually 5 years, 1990 to 1994. No points on offer, but can you tell me who won Best Gimmick to knock him off his perch?
In 95.
I think it was, it would be the WCW, yeah.
Oh, so it's not Diesel. the Giant.
It's a very good guess. Let me just double check this before because I'm 99%, because it was such a popper when I read this. List of Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. Here we go. Best gimmick. Yeah, it was.
Was it the Giant?
No, it wasn't. It was. Start off 1986, Adrian Street, Ted DiBiase, Rick Steiner, Jushin Thunder Liger, Undertaker. Disco Inferno!
Very good.
Oh wow! There's some. I'm gonna do a quiz about Wrestling Observer and Newsletter Awards one day because there's some really interesting ones here. Who held the Best Gimmick Awards prior to CM Punk winning it in 2009?
Cena.
Cena's a good guess. It's not Cena.
Santino.
Yeah, for 2 years running, Santino had the best gimmick.
Excellent.
Which is funny because for 2 years running, like, your best gimmick has been Santino.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there you go. So he did win. Okay. Kevin Nash did win one. I mean, he won it for the NWO in 1996. He also won it for Oz in 1991 for worst gimmick. So there you go.
A promotional tactic for the finger poke of doom or something.
Oh, wow. 1996, the worst gimmick was shared between three people.
Fake Diesel, fake Razor Ramon. I mean, whoever has shared gold deserves a silver underneath those two. Go on, who was it?
It was the real Double J.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which wasn't, in case people playing along at home, was not Double J. It was Road Dogg.
It was.
Oh, there you go. Mordecai won in 2004 for the worst gimmick. I could have asked that one.
Well, then.
At least somewhere Kevin Thorne can isolate the words Mordecai won. That's in 2021.
Yeah. So your gimmick, what's your thing? Your thing is, you know when you like reverse an image? Do that with The Undertaker. Good luck, mate. Right, final question. What did Bray Wyatt first project onto the ring during his match with Randy Orton at WrestleMania 33. Only three options for this because the match is so flipping short.
His ruined hopes and broken dreams.
Not. Phil, your options are maggots, cockroaches, or worms.
Let's go with wriggly worms.
It wasn't. It was, in fact, maggots. And this, it's so funny. I watched it back because I just want to make sure here. I've got these in the right order. Then it like happens. It cuts back to normal. Bray Wyatt's in the ring looking really pleased with himself. And the fans are like. Projections. You were at that one, Phil?
No, I wasn't at that one.
You
that
was the one there, didn't you?
Or was I? Which one was that?
Yeah, that was the Hardy one, wasn't it?
Then, yeah, it was. I must have just completely blocked that out of my memory.
I was looking for this and I found a very good ups and downs article written by one Michael Hamflett, where surprisingly, this was a down from WrestleMania.
Who knew?
Oh, I'm going to see. I could have obviously written 10 questions all about Bray Wyatt. I was like, what supernatural bollocks shall I go with for Bray Wyatt? Because we've got quite the selection to work from here. But anyway, that has been this week's A Bloody Good Quiz. Congratulations, as always, to Michael Hamflett for winning it. I don't know if that's an achievement or not, knowing about all the supernatural bollocks.
Congratulations to Phil. This one with a bit more dignity and self-respect.
I'm going to blame my loss on the fact I've just been spending the last few hours watching Mae Young give birth to a hand for retro ups and downs on Sunday. So that's kind of just all consumed my mind right now.
If that doesn't make you want to watch Retro Ups and Downs on Sunday with Miller, try and get through that. I don't know what will.
The show gets entirely downs. Wow. Oh, wait, no, I think there's one up, one up. He also calls it the worst Raw of all time. So come watch it on Sunday.
The worst Raw of all time, or as it's known now, every week's Raw Ups and Downs.
Just Monday Night Raw.
Right, let us know how you got on in the quiz and your thoughts on everything we discussed on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Phil Chambers at
Phil My Chambers. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett. And you can follow Adam Wilborn at
Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Loads of good stuff coming your way over the weekend. Me and Hamflett are going to be talking all about the WWE releases. Me and Sid will be talking about the major news surrounding AEW and their TV deals as well. Both those podcasts coming out over the weekend. What Culture Wrestling, just make sure you subscribe. And hey, watch you there. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And I promise I'll try not to spoil any pay-per-view results going forward. So thanks very much for the 1-star Vitopia. I'll be better, I promise. But this has been Wrestle Culture. My thanks to Michael Hamflett, to Phil Chambers, to you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Wrestling!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.